When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Better Call Paul is a production of Lola Media. Say hi, Lola.
Hey, everyone. This is Paul Sarker from Better Call Paul. Just wanted to remind you that the show is intended for entertainment purposes only and is not legal advice. I am not your lawyer unless we separately agree for me to represent you, and the views expressed by Mesh and me are solely our own. Hey everyone, welcome back to Better Call Paul, the show where we discuss the legal and business side behind the scenes of Hollywood sports and entertainment. I'm your co-host, Paul Sarker, former Marvel lawyer and current Big Law Media attorney. This week, I'm honored to speak with Oz Krakowski, who is a thought leader in AI, in the AI space, including creating alternative language versions of works, crediting actors for their work, and also in policing or potentially using AI to assess deepfakes and identify them and potentially track them. But it's a very rapidly evolving field, and we're honored to have Oz with us today. Hey, Oz, thank you so much for joining. Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Hey, Paul. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to join this episode, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to your audience and obviously to you. I am I come from a very rich technology background, started as an engineer, but essentially have a deep passion for entertainment from childhood. And I'm very lucky to have had the opportunity and still have the opportunity of combining the two with AI and specifically a deep dub, which I'm sure we're going to talk about more later in this episode.
Before we get into that, I wanted to just ask you about CrossFit, because I did. I saw that you're an avid CrossFitter. You have records and data dating back 10 years, I think, almost. So I'm a avid gym rat. So I go frequently. I start my day probably 6-7 days a week. And I did CrossFit a couple times. And I remember being so tired, just lying on the floor of the shower and just being exhausted for the entire day after that. So I don't know how you do CrossFit every day and then keep your schedule as a technology and AI entrepreneur executive.
You know what they say about CrossFit? It's a culture. culture.
Yes. Yes.
and it's like, what's the first rule of CrossFit? Just like, you know, remember the first rule of Fight Club? We never talk. So first rule of CrossFit is you talk about CrossFit.
Okay.
We can have an entire blog about CrossFit. I specifically started CrossFit, I remember the day, July 15, 2012. And it was about the time I quit my job at corporate America. I quit about a month later and decided to become an entrepreneur and start my own business. But it was kind of like, you know, it was all tied together in a way of, I don't know, maybe, you know, 40s or something like that, decided to make a change in my life. And I learned through CrossFit that it can not only change me, but it gives me the ability to change the lives and lifestyle of people around me. I later on became a coach. I did my my CrossFit trainer certificate, advanced to, you know, another level. I coached for several years, and I enjoy beyond the actual activity itself, which is very efficient. And it's actually, you'd be surprised, it's perfect for business people, because
sure,
people that go to the gym, especially if you don't have the education, you can spend 2 hours and you got to be very focused on what you do. And CrossFit is very efficient. Like, you go in, you go out, 1 hour, bam, you have, you know, the perfect formula to get the best out of that hour in the gym, under instruction.
The AMRAP.
Exactly, the MRAP, the, you know, the Tabata. Now you can, listen, when I talk to people, I tell them, you know, the biggest struggle you have is to put your foot in the door. Like that's 90% of the effort or the challenge is to get in. Once you made that step in, all I'm asking you as a coach, at least, all I'm asking you is, you know, let me lead the way. Just clear your mind, unwind from, you know, from your day job, from everything that happens at home. You're here for an hour. Give me that hour. I'll tell you, you know, exactly what you need to do at every point of the way. And you just do your best effort. And I think that that feeling that you had of, you know, lying on the floor, like about to pass out, that doesn't leave you for a day. It's not that it goes away. It's just like you learn to appreciate it.
Sure.
And I remember the first couple workouts, I came back and the first thought that went through my mind was, I worked so hard. I sweat and I worked out so hard. And what, I'm going to go back home and eat a pizza? So
you also have the right diet.
So that started my entire transformation, because essentially you're 1 hour in the gym a day, at most one a day, and then you have 23 hours
to undo it.
In a day.
If you're me.
To even more, right? Because now I worked out so much, now I need to eat more. So, you know, that's kind of like a psychology that we all have. So I think the part of it is, and that's what CrossFit gives you, is the ability, it's that community that drives you to get back to the gym, to get a very efficient workout in a very structured way and also in a very set amount of time, and then also continue through that and change your entire lifestyle for, you know, for many years to go after that.
No, I agree. And the episode's not about CrossFit, but I will just say this, like, you're pushing yourself, but it's not like adversarial competitive. When I did it, the people I was doing it with, the coaches, the other people, they want you to break your records. They want you to do more in the second round than you did in the first round, and in the final round than you did in the first two rounds. And they're like, there's so much support. And I would also say that what the time that you said you transitioned from being in corporate America to being an entrepreneur, I would also say that it gives you the confidence and belief that you can overcome things, right? Because exactly, you don't know how deep the well of endurance and stamina and energy is until you really test it. And then, by the way, it gets deeper and deeper every time you push yourself to the limit. So great stuff. And so just to transition really quick, I know you are a thought leader in the space. Can you define for the audience, for people listening, what the space is? And can you just give us a quick background between when you transitioned from, I'm assuming it was Texas Instruments or wherever your most recent corporate job was, and then you went and became an entrepreneur. And I know it's constantly evolving, but just tell me, what would you define your space to be? And I know you're speaking all the time, but give us an overview of the sort of things you're talking about.
Absolutely. So first of all, you know, starting from the end, right now, the space I'm operating at with Deep Dub is the entertainment space, or I would say AI for audiovisual content, and specifically around, or the majority of our focus is around globalizing and localizing that content into multiple languages, or taking content from one language, audiovisual content from one language into multiple languages. The biggest place where we're all familiar with this type of activity is the entertainment space. You know, you open Netflix and you choose a Korean series, and you can choose an English audio track to hear it in English. So this was basically dubbed. This is where the Deep Dub comes from. Obviously, we kind of expanded on top of this to do dubbing for, you know, beyond just entertainment, and we can continue talking about that. But essentially, my background and how I got here, as I said earlier, I come from a home where technology was fostered from early age. You know, I remember myself with computer back when I was in first grade and third grade, and I'm talking about, you know, the early days of the computers, you know, back to the Spectrum and the first Apple II Plus or 2E. And
oh wow,
I'm old. And
cutting edge, that's what I'd say.
At that time, it was cutting edge, and I grew up in Israel. The entire family was kind of like focused around that. My dad at the time literally went to the UK to bring one of the first IBM computers to Israel. It cost him a fortune. I'm not sure he really needed that, but it was kind of like, you know, we're all geeks in spirit.
Sure.
And he needed that for his business, and he brought it in, and we grew up on that type of passion for technology. And essentially, when I started my studies at the university, I started in Israel. I started for electrical engineering, EE. So I have a bachelor in EE, and I combined it immediately with computers because I didn't even work in electronics. I worked in software. But I started with software that is for electronics. It's called embedded software. So you code the software that works on the electronics. It kept me pretty much close to the hardware. Mm-hmm. That's how I started my journey. So I'm always a technology oriented in nature. I started with Texas Instruments and then started basically gaining more responsibility in terms of what I can do, what I'm supervising. I was fortunate enough with TI to travel the world. I mean, I moved into France and spent a year and a half there, and then moved into South Korea and lived for 2.5 years in Seoul, and all of that before moving to the United States, to Dallas in 2007, and have been in Dallas since then. So it's about 16 years now, where my kids were born, and we made it our home. Decided after 4 years where we moved over four continents to settle down and
put down roots. Yeah. I like Dallas a lot, other than Cowboys fans. But I got, you know what? I can't hate on them as an Eagles fan. I will just say for the folks, because you mentioned dubbing, and when I started my career before any of this technology, if you made a show in English and someone wanted it in a different language, like you had English actors for the initial production and someone wanted it in French or German or Bengali or whatever, you would have to hire voice actors to re-record the dialogue, and it would sort of kind of sync to the video, but you could always tell that it wasn't 100% accurate. And there was a cost to doing that. And I'm doing international licensing for content. A lot of the times it's like, we'll provide it to you in this language. If you want rights for other countries, we'll tell you what it will cost, and we'll give you a delivery timeline for when we can prepare that language version if we don't have it on hand. And then you have to pay. And it's a very slow process. So, you know, with your technology and deep dub, it does seem like a revolutionary that you could create that without having to hire actors to read the script or the dialogue in 50 different languages and re-record it. So that's really incredible. Let's take a quick break and come back with how you got into deep dub and what's revolutionary about deep dub.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Okay, Oz, just to pick back up on the career trajectory, can you tell us about Deep Dub AI, how long you've been there? Obviously, you're the chief revenue officer. What you do for them and why they are so game-changing?
I joined Deep Dub slightly after the company was founded. The fact of the matter is that the company was actually founded by my two brothers. I'm related to the founders, I would say. And
that helps.
Kind of, right? You think, right? The interesting part here is that when I quit TI back in 2012, I started my own company shortly after. It was in an entirely different space. Unfortunately, after 8 years, COVID came in and, among other things, scared away investors and my startup was shutting down just at the time where Fear and Ear, my two brothers, basically started Deep Dub. So I was the last one to, you know, turn off the lights on my previous startup. And at the point where it was entirely gone, I joined Deep Dub, and I've been here since then.
And I'd just like to point out to folks That is not uncommon, especially if you want to take the risk and be an entrepreneur. Not every business is going to succeed and become like a behemoth, but you still learn a lot. And often when one door closes, another opens shortly thereafter. So I think a lot of it is mindset, because if you are concerned about, oh, I don't want to give up the steady security of the corporate paycheck and, you know, the pros and cons with that stability, some people are afraid, well, what if I start a business and it doesn't succeed? Well, you know, that happens. It's inevitable. The issue is you got to keep going, find the next thing, don't give up on yourself, and pivot. And every opportunity, every time something like that happens, it's a learning experience. And so it's not necessarily failure. It's just a chance to learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a topic for an entire, you know, podcast, you know, episode.
Sure.
I'm happy to do as well. But, you know, you learn more from failures than you learn from successes in the end. Because, you know, you need to learn how to embrace your failures. And one of the things that stuck with me is, you know, there is a famous short clip by Steve Jobs who says, you know, the difference between those who succeeded and those who failed is that those who succeeded persisted. They kept on going.
Absolutely.
Keep on going. So I totally endorse and love what you said about it. I think that is the way. This is the spirit. And if you have the passion, then go for it. Don't let that pull you down. I joined DeepDub and as chief revenue, kind of transitioned into, you know, business development partnerships. Essentially, DeepDub is trying to basically address a very challenging task that you actually mentioned that you're involved with. On one end, it's a task, or the task of localizing content is a task that is tedious. It's very complex, convoluted to some extent, and expensive as well. And let me also put it in the right frame. In some cases, it's expensive for a reason. It makes total sense that it actually costs what it's supposed to cost. But the fact that it's almost entirely at high cost as it is, and what it does, and I think that's the essence of, or the passion that we bring in, is the understanding that by enabling it at scale into additional languages, we are pretty much enabling audiences around the world to access that content. Because otherwise, you know, it's very simple. If you and I are talking in different languages and we don't understand each other, and you are able to read a document that actually enables you to get access to a specific skill, let's say, right? Which could be a profession.
Yeah.
Right? It could be literally the your livelihood could be built on it, on the ability to read the document.
Yeah, work with language all day. That's what we do.
But I'm going even more basic, you know, it's like even lawyers, by definition it is, but I'm going even more basic, you know, just the ability to get trained on a specific, like, I don't know, a plumber, reading manuals, simple as that, you know, it could be much, much, much simpler than this. And the ability to read or access specific content, it can enable or disqualify you from actually being able to access specific activities or profession or, you know, education, definitely entertainment, right?
Right.
You know, I can't watch it if I don't understand it. This is the point where we took off. Do we have a way of increasing that accessibility or increasing access to multiple types of content to other regions of the world? This is the takeoff point.
No, I think it's revolutionary. Yeah. Because imagine, I mean, growing up as a kid, even take a country like India, which, sure, 1.4 billion people, my parents spoke Bengali, but most of the movies were Hindi or some other dialect. So we couldn't understand what people were saying, right? So even though it's the same country, there's so many dialects, so many languages. And so imagine if every film and TV show was available in 200 languages through the use of your technology. I mean, that could really revolutionize the way content can be consumed, because language would no longer be a barrier.
And that's exactly how we started, eliminating or lowering that barrier in order to be able to go into multiple languages, additional languages, and also not within the same languages, but with different types of content.
So can you tell me about the actor royalty program that's implicated in DeepDub?
So DeepDub, the way we started is focusing on high quality, high tier type of content with a very high drive to show our commitment to the industry. Meaning, you know, how can we work with the studios? How can we work with the actors? How can we work with the different entities in the industry, including the, you know, organizations, including certifications? You know, we are TPN certified. TPN is the MP, you know, the Motion Picture Association's Trusted Partner Network certification that basically gives you the ability to access pre-release material. So in terms of security, information security, which is very important, you know, when you work with big studios. And all of this, you know, we're GDPR certified, meaning, you know, where we really care about privacy. All of this comes to show that we came already from the first step in a mode of operation of we want to work with the industry rather than disrupt the industry in a way that, you know, I'll just throw at you technology and, you know, you figure out what to do with it or not. Rather than doing this, let's see if we can bring that technology in a way that benefits you.
Okay. And we can talk about this in our final segment, but I want to talk about AI generally and some of the concerns. And I think what you're presenting is rather than do this as maybe like a contrarian actor or something that's not partnering with the established content producers, the regulatory and the industry regulatory organizations, like let's work with them and bring our technology with their consent and cooperation, right? And so, you know, DeepDub, I know it has contracts with a lot of the big studios and producers to basically grow the use of their tool, but it's doing it in a way that's collaborative as opposed to, hey, let's like shoot first, ask questions later.
That's exactly the point. And the voice actors royalty program is exactly a part of that type of approach where we are specifically addressing professional voice actors. So it's not you and I, it's professional voice actors or offering them an opportunity to get compensated basically for the use of their voice. Okay. In a way that is, you know, in line with what they would do if they were, you know, not using AI. That basically gives them also the opportunity now to do it, you know, to do it in a legal way, to do it with consent, to do it with them understanding exactly what they do, to do it in a way that we guarantee that, you know, we're not training on their voice. You know, it's only going to be used for the projects they, you know, they approve, etc. So
does that mean you have the actors saying something like common words and you can piece that together in different languages? Or are you using your AI to take recordings of them and then create new transcripts?
We basically ask them to record a specific transcript or, you know, record some voice data. They give us that data. We create a model that is not based on other materials, that is based on the data that they provided. And using that model, we're creating a voice style, you can say, all right? It's a voice style that will use their likeness. And then when we have a producer that is using our platform, they can go and choose to use that specific voice. And if they use that specific voice in a project, the voice actor, who's the owner of that voice or that voice style or that likeness, will get compensated for that use.
That's great. So, I mean, that is, don't even think about it. So that's, you're using AI, you're giving the actor consent and approval over the use of their likeness, but also using that same data to meet customers' needs in a way that helps the customer save some cost, time, and expense, and also allows the actor to get compensated. So it really is a win-win-win. That's great. Let's take a quick break and come back with the AI industry more generally, because I'm very curious about your thoughts.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So, Oz, it seems like DeepDub has maybe found the special sauce, the way to leverage AI in a way that doesn't ruffle feathers with talent and also is collaborative with the studios. I mean, AI has just really taken off, right? In for better or for worse, in technology and the way we create content, the way we automate. And I think there's a couple critical concerns that most people have. I'd say I'd structure them around transparency and how to label something that was created via AI. authenticity, which is sort of the flip side of that transparency point. When something is created, how do we know? Consent/permission. You know, we talked about in episode 238, the Authors Guild is suing OpenAI because they're claiming that the books written by these famous authors were used to train OpenAI's LLMs without consent or any licensing structure. And then ownership, and that is whether something is created, you know, solely or majority by an algorithm, can that be owned via copyright, patent, the way our laws are currently drafted and interpreted? If it's solely made by an algorithm, it's not eligible for copyright, and I believe it's not eligible for patent as well. But the law is constantly changing. So as you said with Deep Dub, you're kind of addressing the issue by giving actors ongoing compensation and consent rights and making sure that the data is solely what they provide. But not every one of the AI companies that exist does that, follows those same moral code or principles or whatever. So what do you think the solution is if a company isn't necessarily as principled as Deep Dub?
I think that's a great question. And I would say that if you're a production company or a content owner or a voice actor, you should choose carefully who you work with. It's very simple. I think from that perspective, in the end, the technology is out there and many people can make different use of it. The way our approach is, we would like to be in control of the technology, but give you access to the use cases rather than the ability to start doing all the, you know, all the deepfakes that can be abused, right? We've seen those in the past couple of years. Rather than having that, give you access to the outcome where we are in control of it and build a reputation and a brand around, you know, the ability to basically do this in an ethical way. As you are interacting with the company on the other end, definitely, you know, make sure that you're getting in bed with the right folks.
So this, I think, comes down to a little bit of trust, but then can you build your platform, your back end in a manner that allows the actors to see, okay, these are the projects that I've been used in, or perhaps, you know, maybe there's a scenario where it's like, you've been requested to have your voice used in this movie, but an actor can say, no, I decline, or the actor can say, yes, blah, 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 and then they get paid. Or what if someone were to say, hey, I don't like the way that sounds anymore, and I'm not getting any more recording work, everyone's going to you, would they be able to terminate that grant of rights?
Absolutely. Yes, that's part of it. They own the ability to have, you know, certain level of control. I mean, what's done is done. What is not done can be terminated. And think of it, in fact, the way we approach this specifically, the royalty program is just the way dubbing is done today. When you do dubbing today as a voice actor, you basically contribute your voice to create a new dialogue. You don't give away your voice, you just give away the dialogue.
Right.
And once you recorded the dialogue and your customer received the dialogue, the dialogue itself is no longer yours. But your voice stays yours.
Right. So it's the results and proceeds of your recording that can be owned and contributed to the either the studio or the dubbing house or potentially you, but not the underlying, not your voice, just the recording.
Exactly.
That's just as it's fixed into a medium. I
exactly.
That. So
and your voice stays yours, and it's the same here in a way that the only difference is that we create a voice model that's based on your voice. But the minute you decide to, you don't want us to continue doing that, you know, we delete that. It's entirely isolated from everything else we do. We don't train on that voice samples, voice data. Our technology is not built on it. It just enables the creation of it and the use of it. But other than that, once you decide you don't like to do that anymore, you know, it's very simple to delete that voice and it's done.
Let's say it was something like Better Call Paul. And I have, you know, some family in India, some family in Australia, my family in India, some of them don't speak English. Could you turn Better Call Paul into like a Bengali language podcast? And if so, would it be my voice, or would you hire a Bengali actor and then have them create Bengali voice actor and have their voice be the substance of Better Call Paul in Bengali?
The answer is actually either of the two. And it's your choice as the content owner. We could use your voice because in this case, it's the case that you brought up on the table is a simple one, I would say, because you own the content and you also own the performance and the voice because it is you. So you could say, listen, okay, I want my voice to be in the target language. in all the target languages, and you would give your voice because that's what you'd like to do. So you will give the consent to use your voice.
Even in languages that I don't speak?
Even in languages that you don't speak, correct.
Wow.
Yeah, and it would be your voice, and of course we would require your consent. I'll give you a more complex situation where we have a content owner that would like to use the original actors' voices and doesn't have consent. And if they don't have consent, we tell them no, we're not going to do it. Straight and simple.
Okay, so it's like you hire, for example, let's say Studio A hires actors, makes a movie, releases it in America, and then they want to release it, let's say, on streaming all around the world, but they don't have the ability to use the original act. They don't have in their agreements the ability to use the original actor's voice in different languages. You would say, hey, we can't use the original actors. We can do this with other voice actors, but we can't use the original actors unless you separately go get the consent.
Correct. And then what we would do is we will say, listen, I cannot use the original actors. I have voices from the voice actor, you know, the voice actor royalty program, for example, where I can use those voices. These voice actors will get compensated for these voices.
That's so incredible. So let me ask you, where do you think this all heads? Do you believe in like free market, like the companies, the AI companies, that in addition to having a good product that's reliable and efficient and accurate, the companies that have strong ethical principles and guidelines will do better overall just based on the market? Or do you think that governments should be getting involved in legislating this?
It's a big and a very good question. First of all, personally, I'm more of a believer in open markets and competition, but I do believe in trust and code of ethics and intent. I will also add that I think that the law today is still very infant. The way it actually looks at AI, you know, we had the strike. The strike came to a resolution. There are definitely specific items that are you know, relevant for the way AI is used with actors, with writers. But I think a lot of it is kind of, we're still in a trial and error phase. You know, there's like, let's give it the baseline. And they literally say, you know, we started somewhere in 2 years or 2-3 years, it's going to open. We're going to, you know, measure our steps and adjust accordingly.
And I would say this, because I agree, law is always, it's reactive, right? In the sense that it's a framework, it's principles. There are certain things that we'd like to say are okay, are permissible, are would require approval or are restricted. But ultimately, you know, what you're doing is you're balancing scales, cost, benefit. And over time, you get smarter about what the true costs are and what the true benefits are. So sometimes we have to let these things, new technologies, for example, new rights, whatever they are, evolve, right? And so I think the key is to have transparency and insight and good data so that people can be objective about how to make these decisions. And if we say, hey, we got it wrong. We said that you didn't need permission to do X, Y, and Z. And after 10 years, that's created a lot of problems. And now people don't feel like they have ownership over their own voices. Let's change the law. So we can always revisit the law because it's evolving. But in terms of establishing a framework for how a business should work or how a new technology should be implemented, I think that's very much trial and error, learn by doing. And then, you know, as you get smarter, you create boundaries and guidelines.
And I'll add to this, that especially with technology that is advancing so fast, AI, we've seen in 2023 is a transformational year for AI with the, you know, with OpenAI, ChatGPT just started kind of like just before 2023, about a year ago. And then what happens throughout the year literally transformed so many industries. And we're just, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg, pretty much. So, you know, it's incredible. So the process is so fast, and there is no way that the law can actually react so fast. We see that. So it's going to be a gradual learning curve. And I think, again, from our perspective, the way to address it is, you know, we are not, especially as a, you know, as a small company, we're not going to invent new laws or go against existing laws. We're trying to operate within the existing framework, where it's a gray you know, we go into discussions with our customers and come to an agreement and adjust accordingly. Like right now, the strike is done. We can adjust accordingly, based on these agreements and keep going forward.
Operating the gray area. That's what we do. Oz, thank you so much. For anyone listening, where can they find you? Are you active on social, LinkedIn, X? What's your platform of choice and what's your handle?
Best way to reach out to me is over LinkedIn. You can find me, Oz Krakowski. Look out for me there. I'm attending many conferences, like you said earlier. I was talking last week at the OTTX. I'll be talking again at Real Screen at the end of January, and happy to engage in additional discussions if anyone is interested to pick my brain on AI and ethical use of it in entertainment or otherwise.
Thank you so much, Oz. This was very educational for me. I think Deep Dub, it seems like it's in the perfect spot in that it's in an area that addresses a high cost inefficiency in the business in a way that allows actors and studios to both benefit from the value that you're creating. In addition to your company. And thank you so much for joining. Everyone, that's our show for this week. Thank you for listening to Better Call Paul. Please like, subscribe, and tell your friends about it. Thank you so much, Oz.
Thank you.
Better Call Paul is produced and edited by Valentino Rivera and assistant producer Lisa Sanders.